way out west California, long, long way from home. Ain't got no one to love me, baby, gotta get me back where I belong. I'm on the Detroit train, on Detroit train. Take me home back where I belong. I'm on Detroit train.
With apologies to James Brown, Jeff Daniels just might be the hardest working man in show business. Good afternoon. I'm Elliot Forrest in for Leonard Lopate. Beginning with Milos Forman's Ragtime in 1981, he's acted in countless films, television, movies, Broadway, off-Broadway. Currently stars as news anchor Will McAvoy in Aaron Sorkin's HBO series The Newsroom. Daniels has also just released Grandfather's Hat, his latest CD of original tunes. Beginning tonight, he opens a three-night stand at 54 Below, the Broadway Supper Club here in New York City. And on January 31st through February 1st, he'll perform alongside Patty Griffin, Nico Case, and others at the 37th Annual Ann Arbor Folk Festival. I'm pleased to welcome Jeff Daniels back to the studio. It's good to meet you.
Oh, nice to be here.
Happy New Year.
You too.
I love the latest CD, Grandfather's Hat. It's an acoustic collection. There's a lot of humor, and some of the tunes are touching and poignant. Is there a general through line for the whole CD?
Creative confusion, I think, is what we're going for. It's similar to the acting career. I mean, when you go from a Gettysburg or a Squid and the Whale to Dumb and Dumber, you know, you've kind of A to Z. So the music kind of moves around. I enjoy entertaining people. I really like to – I think that comes from Broadway and the theater where you have a direct connection with the audience. Sometimes I'll talk right to the audience. And then I think the humor and the more humorous songs sometimes set up the more poignant ones. And it's more of a punch to the gut when you've got them laughing first.
Did you always sing?
Yeah, I came from a small town in Michigan where any guy who could carry a tune was thrown into the choir. And then the choir director did musicals. And because I could carry a tune, she put me in Oliver and Fiddler on the Roof and Music Man, you name it. And I just kept singing like it was normal. I mean, I was never – I remember auditioning in Broadway, and that's where the big boys are singing, you know, the guys who
– can hit the back of the house.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
And so I was – I had one musical audition, and that was it. But I really gravitated towards the singer-songwriters, the Stevie Goodmans and the Arlo Guthries, and then Christine Lavin, later on Lyle Lovett, John Hyatt, guys like that. And I just loved the writing, the songwriting, and the character that was in those singing voices of those people. And so I kept at it.
And the guitar, when did you start that?
I bought one in 1976 when I moved to New York. I was 21 at the time, and do the math, 58. And I learned how to play it sitting around, and it was a great creative outlet. It was a great friend. I mean, any actor knows that you sit in that one-room apartment for years, wait for the phone to ring, and this the guitar really became a great friend. And creatively, I was around people like Lanford Wilson, a Pulitzer Prize-winning playwright at Circle Repertory Company, and people like that who wrote. I'd never seen a living, breathing playwright before, and I was fascinated by the way he just used imagery and words. And I, you know, every actor wants to direct. I wanted to write, and the guitar was an outlet for that. There were a lot of bad songs written, but there were a lot of writing going on, and kept at it over the years.
You got six shows at 54 Below. You don't sing out a lot, I'm told. It can't be stage fright. Is it just busy? What is it?
It's busy. I'm with Newsroom, that's a minimum six-month shoot. So you go to L.A., and with Aaron Sorkin doing the writing and me playing Will McAvoy, you don't have a lot of time to do anything except learn next week. And so that's I've found that I've tried to do that in the past where I'd gig on the weekends, but it not with Newsroom. It's just too much of a demand, and you don't want to show up Monday and Tuesday and not be at your best for Aaron. So I just would curtail it, and this is kind of a time when I can go out during the holidays into January to kind of, you know, just have some fun and play again.
Elliot Forrest in for Leonard Lopate. My guest is Jeff Daniels, performing at 54 Below for the next few days, his own music. And you brought along your mandolin player, Brad Phillips, and you have your guitar out. Anything you want us to hear this morning?
Yeah, well, sure. Here's one. It's called Uptown Train, and it's that song that everybody... We've all stood on that subway platform, especially as a young actor, and you look around at everybody, and everybody's just kind of realized heading in that same direction. They're trying to go someplace better. Standing on the platform, waiting on Uptown Train. Standing on the platform, waiting on Uptown Train. When that train comes in, I'm gonna ride my blues away. Oh, man with a briefcase giving me an evil eye. Oh, that man with a briefcase and giving me an evil eye. We're gonna chase that dollar, mister, till the day you die. A strung out junkie, he'd die for a little taste. Oh, strung out junkie, he'd die for a little taste. His clock is ticking and there ain't no time to waste. And that police man, he leaning up against the wall. And that police man, he leaning up against the wall. When you look away, you don't see nothing at all. Little old lady, she got both hands on her purse. Little old lady, she got both hands on her purse. Things are bad, but she'll be damned, they're gonna get worse. Homeless Joe, he got a big bag of soda cans. Homeless Joe, he got a big bag of soda cans. When he cashes in, he gonna be a wealthy man. And that old booty man got a feather in his pork pie. And that old blues man, he got a feather in his pork pie. And a smile on his face is, what do you think about that? We're all standing on the platform waiting on Uptown. We're all standing on the platform waiting on Uptown Train. When that train comes in, we're gonna ride our blues away.
All right.
Mama whispers, shh, baby, now don't you cry. Mama whispers, shh, baby, now don't you cry. She sings that child the subway lullaby. We're all standing on the platform waiting on Uptown Train. Shh, standing on the platform waiting. When a train comes in, we're gonna ride our blues away. When a train comes in, we're gonna ride our blues away. When a train comes in.
Jeff Daniels performing live in the WNYC studios, along with mandolin player Brad Phillips. It's a song from the new album, Grandfather's Hat. Great. Thank Beautiful. You. Really terrific.
It's a New York song. It
certainly feels like that. I think we've all been there. All the proceeds from this album, I'm told, go to your Purple Rose Theater in Michigan. Just briefly, if you would, tell us about this little place you started.
We're 22 years old, I believe, maybe 23 now. I lose count, but we... I just wanted to create what I remembered as Circle Repertory Company in the village. And when I moved back home to Michigan, I gathered a lot of professional theater people who didn't get the breaks I did and bought a building and threw it into this small town of Chelsea, Michigan, and said, let's create Circle Rep and put it in the Midwest. And that meant new plays and Michigan artists, professional people, and it's worked well. People have really taken to it, and you know, the arts live; they are alive and well. You just got to kind of support them. And so, it's a great give back for me, not only to those people who didn't get the breaks I did, but for that 21-year-old kid that I used to be. You know, I didn't have the Purple Rose when I left Michigan and came to New York, and now that kid, that actor, he or she has a place where they can learn before they go.
And clearly the name The Purple Rose, inspired by the Purple Rose of Cairo movie you did with Woody Allen, right?
That was a turning point to make a
movie.
In
what way?
Well, because it was, you know, the critics mattered up to that point. I mean, like with any artist, the validation that they provide, right or wrong, it's there it is, and it's hard to ignore. However, when you get a Woody Allen, halfway, not only cast me, but halfway through the movie, he said, you're good. I was okay creatively. I said, if I'm good enough for Woody, I'm good enough for anybody, and that was a huge deal for me.
That you have this theater, it's clear that you like doing theater. I saw you in God of Carnage on Broadway. That seemed loads of fun.
It was. We had a great time, the four of us.
You must have been truly saddened by the recent loss of the co-star in that play, James Gandolfini.
Yeah, we were all rocked. Marcia Hope and I were all rocked by his. Very surprising passing, and he was a great guy. His generosity, you know, people who know him as Tony Soprano, he was off stage. He was incredibly generous. It was interesting to be on stage in some of those early previews with him, because it unnerved Jim to when the people would just applaud and just, I mean, it was sustained
on his entrance.
Yeah, well, we were all there, but right. It was, you know, I mean, it was Jim and. He was going, God, I wish they wouldn't do that. And I said, Jim, they're thanking you for The Sopranos, for what you did. And it was cool to witness that. Really was.
Let's talk about Newsroom on HBO. Also great fun to watch. What first attracted you to the series? Is the subject matter Aaron Sorkin, a bit of each?
Aaron Sorkin and then HBO, 1 and 2. I mean, then it was, what do I have to do to get this? And I met with Aaron and... he was aware of me and had seen, you know, in particular, I knew he was a fan of Purple Rose of Cairo and he had seen God of Carnage as well. So he knew I could dip into the temper that Will can possess sometimes. But it's been a great marriage of actor and writer. I just love taking his script and trying to give him not only what he wants, but something neither one of us thought was coming. And he writes and I act, and it's I hope we get to do it for years.
Sorkin comes with a bit of baggage for a lot of people. Some people think it's particularly this series is maybe just a platform for his political leanings. You had no hesitation at all in jumping right in.
No, I mean, look, you know, Fox News is you know, they're on one side of the aisle. So it's we, in a divided country, from day one of shooting of season one, we knew we were going to tick people off. You just know it. And we live in a society now with social media where people want to hate. They want to jump on you. They want to, you know, bring you down and make a target of it. And he calls people on some of that. And you may not like what he's saying, but, you know, our attitude is, well, then don't watch it. Shut up and go away. Because there are people who are, you know, for every one of you, there's two or three that are going, thank you, thank you. And that doesn't mean liberals. It just means people going, somebody's telling us the truth. And you can agree or disagree, but, you know,
I don't think I've ever seen a series that took this much historical perspective, in the sense that, I mean, I only imagine somebody's going through massive amounts of videotape to go, we're telling the story, we're going back a year or two, or sometimes it feels like only months, mm-hmm. and getting this material and creating a drama out of what is our recent history. I can't remember anybody ever doing that.
Yeah, and I think the show, fictional, must remind people, fictional.
It's a story. Sort of.
It's, well, but it's, you know, we're not going, oh, by the way, now do Brian Williams. Make sure you do that thing that we researched Brian Williams. And we never researched Brian Williams. We didn't research anybody. I didn't. And it really becomes that, how does news get on the air, and what are the decisions that, and what are the pitfalls? And it's certainly in season two, Will McAvoy and company screwed up big time. And that's not aimed at any other particular real life news setting. It's we're fictional, and it cable news is very, very important nowadays. People have it on all day, just like NPR. I mean, we're constantly news junkies, and I think there's some drama in and around that. And our whole intention was to create Newsnight and Will McAvoy and kind of drop it in the middle of all the other real life news settings, and that's our attempt.
You said you didn't check into Brian Williams, a composite of different anchors. How did you really develop the character?
It was so much there. You were playing more of this guy who happened to do news. And actors do a thing, and I did this. It's substitution. And I've been in theater and films for 25, 30 years or so, right? So I really know how to do that. I just have to. I've had so much experience. And that you just transpose that into that news desk. And there are mechanics in how to do a teleprompter and this and that and the other thing. But basically, you have to be at home there, like you're at home on the Broadway stage or something, or in front of a movie camera. And so you just transpose that, and that becomes this thing of where you look down the lens of the barrel of the camera and you go, I'm going to explain to you what happened today. You can trust me. That's all you have to know. And then it's just a matter of how you execute that and how you present that. That's all I did. I didn't want anyone to think I was doing them so that when Will loses his temper, oh, that's so-and-so. It's not. It never was.
I won't harp on it, but did you ever run into Keith Olbermann? I'm just curious if you had a conversation.
That we were doing Keith.
Yeah.
And I don't believe I've ever met him. I don't. I may have done 15 years ago, but I don't think so. And you know what? No. No, I didn't. I mean, Aaron and I never once had a conversation about who to model it after. And we just never did. We just, here's the script, here's the scene, go ahead, and that's what it was.
Is there any conversation on the set between Aaron Sorkin or the actors about the snappy dialogue? I also imagine, of course, I'm making this up, a new actor comes on the scene and go, all right, you got to pace it like this. You got to come back to me. No breaks in between. You got to pick up your cues. Is that
well, if you're an idiot, you don't research West Wing. You don't look at West Wing and go, my God, is Allison Janney and Bradley Whitford. They're moving.
Right.
They're moving. So that you know that going in. What's fun is that we know we got to go what we call Sorkin speed right away. At 7 in the morning, you got to be there. And I tell Jane Fonda, everybody said, know it and know what you're going to do with it. And when we day players come in, we've seen heads implode. They just – when they get to take two and we pick it up, they just melt. It's just a lot of them handle it, but it's fun when they, as we say, go Chernobyl.
You got to keep up or get out, I guess.
Yep.
I only have one request, and that's more Olivia Munn. That's just me.
No, okay. She's done great. I love Olivia. She's done a really good job. She was the least experienced of all of us, and she really works hard and has really fit in well, I think.
In September, you won the Emmy for Best Actor in a Drama. Just to remind the listeners that you won for the role of Will McAvoy in Newsroom, your competition, Bryan Cranston in Breaking Bad, and Kevin Spacey, House of Cards, John Hamm, Mad Men, Damian Lewis for Homeland. You seemed truly stunned at that award ceremony.
Yeah. Well, if you read the interweb, which I don't, but my wife does. She goes, I said, what are my chances? She goes, well, out of six, the internet says that you're fifth or sixth. So we were there for the food. We were there hoping that the salmon was good.
And was it?
Maybe a nice side dish, you know, something. That was it. We were no expectations. So we were a new show. It was, you know, and these guys have been around forever. They're all great. I mean, at the end of the day, it could have been any of us. And there's another 6 to 8 to 10 guys who easily could have been nominated.
Right.
Television is, it's such a great time to be an actor, and with the writing has really gone to television. And for guys like me, it's a great place to be. So I was, truly surprised, but very grateful.
I know you got to go. I wanted to ask about Dumb and Dumber. I know the
on NPR,
the
you want to ask about Dumb and Dumber?
Please, it's huge, right? Almost 20 years later?
It is.
What can you tell us about the sequel?
I can tell you that we're middle-aged and still that stupid, and we may have regressed intellectually. I know that I am just recovering from the headache that came from going from Will McAvoy to Harry Dunn. It's quite the intellectual freefall.
Right. It's a vast difference. That's true.
But it was great to work with Jim. He's a comedic genius, a one-of-a-kind guy, and I loved working with him. And we hope it's funnier than the first one.
We're going to hear another little bit of one of your tracks from your CD. I've been talking with actor and musician Jeff Daniels. He'll be performing at 54 Below starting tonight. That's at 254 West 54th Street. And you can find more information about tickets on our show page. I want to thank mandolin player Brad Phillips for coming in as well. Jeff Daniels, thanks for being here.
Thanks, Elliot.
Did the man named Reuben, so it was his name. Every open day, deer camp, he hung his head in shame. Reuben, he loved hunting, but he never had no luck. After 30 years of trying, well, he still ain't bagged a buck. Some say he's unlucky, some say he's just cursed. Some say when he pulled that trigger, Reuben was the worst. There goes a buckless super, hang your head in shame. There goes a buckless super, hang your head in shame. There goes a buckless super, hang your head in shame. In the Escanaba moonlight, Reuben Sody was his name.